Hi there. This is a CPD in 140 podcast on EduTalk Radio, and I'm Ian Guest. I'm currently engaged in doctoral research looking at teacher professional learning supported through Twitter. If you're interested and would like to know more, head over to my research blog, cpdin140.wordpress.com. One of the methods I'm using is semi-structured interviews, and if participants give the permission, I'll post our resulting chat here on EduTalk. If you're interested in being involved, I'd be delighted to hear from you. Just drop me a tweet or DM at Ian in Sheffield on Twitter. I have with me today Joe Dale, who will be well known to many folks within the Twitter community. He's kindly agreed to give me some time to talk about Twitter and professional learning. It's something I know Joe's quite familiar with. He's written about it on a number of occasions in the past, so I'm really interested to hear his perspective today. So perhaps, Joe, just for those folks who may not be familiar with you, could you just give me a little bit of detail about your role in education and a little bit of your history there?
Yeah, no problem at all, Ian. First of all, thanks ever so much for inviting me on. I love these sort of serendipitous moments you get on Twitter, whereby I was listening to Jonesy Boy's interview that he did with you recently.
Oh, yeah.
And tweeted about it, and then you sort of got in contact and said, "Oh, would you like to appear on the on Skype as well, or be recorded as part of your research?" So I'm really flattered and grateful for the opportunity. So, yeah, for those people that don't know me, I've been on Twitter since 2007. So I was pretty much an early adopter, to say the least. And I was a languages teacher for 13 years, teaching French at secondary level for 3 years in North Wales for 1 year. North Wales for 2 years, and Somerset, Yeovil and Somerset for 1 year. And then I went to teach in a middle school on the Isle of Wight, which I did for 10 years. And I still live on the Isle of Wight, which is in fact where we are right now. On the 21st of December, and it's very sort of grey outside, but never mind, and quite chilly, but never mind. And since 2009, I decided to become an independent languages consultant, and I've been all over the world running training on the use of how technology can enhance language learning. But I was first and foremost a language teacher, then developed an interest in technology, and went from there, and I've been an early adopter in lots and lots of different technologies and different ideas, and I absolutely love connecting with people online and chatting about new technologies as well as lots of other things, as well as some sort of silly puns and things like that as well. I think it's important to be yourself online as much as possible, and to be professional, but at the same time to have a bit of banter as well from time to time. I think that's very important, otherwise it gets a bit boring.
Indeed. That's a very fulsome answer. Thanks, Joe. You mentioned that you started probably back in 2007 on Twitter. Can you recall what it was that prompted you to actually get started?
Well, when it first started, Twitter, it was just like one of these tools. You sort of think, well, I'll give it a go. I'll see what happens. Because I'm sure you remember back in sort of 2006, 2007, Web 2.0, as it was called, was absolutely exploding. There were lots and lots of tools that were coming out all the time. Things I was trying out, like Flickr and SlideShare and Blogger and all the rest of it. And so Twitter just seemed like another tool. And at the time, if you ask someone, would you like to receive a type of text message from someone from somewhere else in the world, you know, that wouldn't necessarily excite you in the way that it actually has proved to be an amazing resource. But at the time, along with people like yourself, like to people like David Noble and what have you, because that's another point as well, there weren't that many language teachers at all at the time on Twitter, but I'm sure we'll go on to talk about that later on. And it was very much sort of like a bit like the Wild West, in the sense that you didn't really know who you were talking to, or finding people to talk to was a challenge at the beginning. But having said that, I think there was a real like tight knit community that developed over time, and people really trusted each other. And it certainly wasn't mainstream. And then I would say about 2010 or so, sort of 3 years later, it became very mainstream. And then you were seeing things like hashtags included on television programs at the beginning, and this sort of thing. And that's been very, very exciting, seeing the journey for what, nearly 10 years now I've been on Twitter. But it's changed my life in lots of ways. But again, I'm sure we'll talk about that later.
Indeed. That's fascinating. What kinds of things do you do on Twitter? What kind of actual activities are you involved in?
Okay, so I think what I personally decided to do on Twitter is I've decided to most of the time tweet links to articles that I found either through retweets on Twitter or through Feedly. So I'm a big fan of RSS readers, and Feedly is my RSS reader of choice. So I read that every day, and I'm constantly tweeting articles from that, as well as I find stuff on Facebook. Although I'm not, on Facebook I'm more of a sort of like a user who connects with people personally rather than professionally. Although I do follow people professionally as well on Facebook, but I try to delineate the two really. Twitter is very much for my sort of professional working life. Although, as I said already, I do like a bit of banter as well from time to time. But on Facebook, primarily, I've used it to connect with friends and family and find out what they're doing and what their kids are up to and that sort of thing. But having said that, obviously, there's as with all these things nowadays, there's blurring. And so, obviously, from time to time, I'll come across an article on Facebook which I find interesting. Annoyingly, unless you know different to this, annoyingly, you can't just tweet straight from Facebook. Well, I think you used to be able to, but you can't anymore. No doubt that's a sort of a power conflict between the two. To behemoths, but I will open it up in Safari and then tweet it from there, which is another few steps or so, but that's a bit annoying. But yeah, so I would say retweeting on Twitter, Feedly and Facebook, so all the and Flipboard as well. I keep a Flipboard of all the interesting things which I come across, and I collect those. I think that curating content is incredibly important because there's so much stuff that's coming out every day. But having sort of created this community of language teachers called the MFL Twitterati, which I'm sure we'll talk about in more detail later on, I'm finding that what I'm trying to do, to be completely honest, is I'm trying to feed them information which I think they'll find interesting and useful, and then they will then want to retweet that or try things out or what have you. Or if I've come across an interesting app, because I'm particularly interested in iPads as well as Chromebooks and other types of technology, but iPads I would say is where most of the work that I'm getting at the moment is found. And so what I'll do is I'll come across an app, I'll tweet about it, I'll encourage people to try it out. Some people will then say try it out, and then give me feedback that will either confirm my guts feeling about whether an app is good or not, and then that will be very, very useful, and then you can sort of carry on that conversation afterwards. I also use a tool called Storify, which I find very useful for collecting tweets together in the same place, which are around a certain theme. So I've got a Storify called iPads in MFL. So when anyone in the MFL Twitterati tweets about iPad use, particularly if they've got an actual picture, an actual classroom with kids working on an iPad and talking about how they're using the iPad app in the context of language learning, that's fantastic. But also, that's good from the point of view of sharing that with other people, but also I always say in sort of presentations, etc., that those people not only can learn from other people, they can also see their Twitter username in the Storify. They can then connect with them and then carry on that conversation, applying it to their own context. So I think that's very useful. So yes, there's a 24-hour a day stream of information, and I'm certainly not on Twitter 24 hours a day. I do sleep, believe it or not. But having said that, I think that it's incredibly useful to, if you like, connect with like-minded people who may be nodes, if you like. That's, I think that's a term I picked up from Leon Sitch many years ago, piggybacking on the shoulders of giants and following people who are following lots of people, so that when you tweet something or you follow something, that they are following. You have a whole network that you can connect with that people that they're following already, and I think that's what it's all about. So I think curating content is incredibly important, because if you don't do that, you can easily get lost, and that's why I put together like a list of like-minded teachers, language teachers, called the MFL Twitterers list, and it's got over 4,600 members now. So it means that when people say follow me on Twitter, I follow them back, I add them onto the list, and that means that when they tweet, they immediately get a real audience of people interested in languages, presumably, and that's why they subscribe to the list. So that's incredibly powerful, because as I was saying back in 2007, it very much was like the Wild West, and it was really just a very keen, enthusiastic early adopters that you always get when a piece of technology first comes out, that want to try things out. But I would say the bulk, by say 2010 or so, the bulk of people who are sort of maybe on Facebook, but maybe have dabbled in Twitter but haven't really got into it, you need to give them a helping hand, I think, or a twand, if that's a word. You need to give them a helping hand to try and get them involved in the community and help them to get it, if that makes sense. Because I think a lot of people, when they first sign up to Twitter, they'll like send a tweet out there saying, oh, has anyone got anything on the perfect tense for my year 9 class, etc., or whatever it might be. They don't get a reply and they think, well, Twitter's rubbish. But if they follow me and I retweet that question, let's say, or someone else in the community retweets it, then suddenly they could potentially have lots and lots of answers. So that's how it works. It is very much a community of people helping each other. And that has become, I think, more subject specific, I found. Having said that, I still love you know, tweeting with people from all over the world who maybe aren't in my immediate language community, as it were, but or people that maybe randomly come up from time to time making some silly comment or a pun or whatever. I love that as well. I love, as I said already, I love the serendipity of Twitter. It's great, and every day is new and different, and new things appear in your timeline, so it's great stuff. I'm sure you feel similarly, Ian.
Indeed, I have over the years. That's one of the reasons that I got interested in this particular aspect of it. There's an awful lot there, a fine amount of information, Joe. You've named a number of different applications, a number of different technologies that you use, with which Twitter sits, if we could say that. Mm-hmm. What function does it perform with all the others? How does it link with them? One of the things you said right at the beginning was that you get information from Feedly and Facebook, for example, and then you send it back out through Twitter. So is it that direction, or how does it actually work with the others in your mind?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really important point. To me, Twitter is the what's the word? Not the valve, but the focus on all my different bits of information. I always send it to Twitter if I can. So I'm always looking for tweet this on a Guardian article or whatever it might be, or looking for that Twitter button so that I can then tweet it out there, so I can share it with the community. And as I said already, keep feeding the community with stuff that you think they want, because that's how it works, really. But then at the same time, I use different tools such as Flipboard and Storify in order to curate my own content, which I can then use when, let's say, I'm preparing for a keynote or what have you, or a presentation. What I'll do is I'll go through my Flipboard and I'll see all the different things that I've clipped or that I've found, which I think are useful, and that helps me to create a narrative in my mind on what I want to talk about. Mm. And then using those classroom examples or those sorts of national news stories, let's say, are, in my opinion, incredibly useful for linking together a story on what you want to talk about in the presentation. And so I think that Twitter is one of the be-all and end-alls of keeping up to date with current news. And lots of language teachers have said things like, I heard about it on Twitter, you know, a week or 2 weeks or a month before anyone else in my department did. If let's say Ofsted have come out with something, or the government have come out with something, and you hear about it on Twitter within probably an hour or so of it being, or less than that, of it being published. And again, through a community of like-minded people on a list or like the MFL Twitterati, it means that through a couple of retweets, then immediately you get the information that you want, and it is subject specific. That's the incredible thing. I mean, we see this all the time with when someone's died or there's been some disaster or what have you, that you get certain tweets that are retweeted thousands of times all over the world. Well, this is an equivalent, but on a much smaller scale, but to do with languages or a particular subject, and so that's what I tend to do. I tend to use Twitter as the main focus point for retweeting everything or adding everything to that my Twitter timeline. But at the same time, I use other tools to curate the content for specific ideas I'm interested in, because I'm constantly researching different things. And I find that's the way to go. But I think, as you sort of implied earlier, everyone has to find their own pathway. So someone listening to this might think, wow, that's way too much, or Joe's just a power user, or I can never do that, or whatever. But I think that by giving people nuggets of information, they can then choose to go in their own pathway if they want to, but they don't have to. That's the great thing. It's like with teaching, isn't it? There's no one right way of teaching, even though you believe through some, let's say, high profile people on Twitter, that there is only one way to teach. But I certainly don't agree with that. And the great thing about Twitter in particular is the way that you can drop in and drop out and find stuff and put spins on things and put things in your own context, etc., and make things work for you. And that's what it's all about. That's why I think it has a huge potential. Well, it not just potential, but it is, in my opinion, fantastic for professional development. But it's not the be-all and end-all, but it's a great starting point for you to explore other ideas, whatever you're interested in, essentially.
Excellent. I wonder if I can take that cue where you mentioned professional development and mm-hmm. Or professional learning or CPD or whatever phrase anyone would want to use. How would you say that what takes place on Twitter, some of the things that you've described that you do, might be considered professional learning or professional development? Where is it a parallel? Are there direct comparisons? What do you think?
I think to start off with, I'm sure you're familiar with the Alec Kouros diagram, the network teacher. So I always used to start off that in presentations, talking about Twitter and the power of 21st century learning, if you like, and teachers being proactive and going out there and finding information online, such as on blogs and wikis on Twitter via Skype, and all that connecting that you can do now for free, or you've been able to do for 10 years or so. And I think that's incredibly powerful, but in lots of ways it's about raising awareness to teachers that they can do that. And that was very difficult, I think, at the beginning. It really was just the early adopters. Lots of people throwing school at the idea of people having a blog. I can remember people tittering at the start of presentations, and I would say, well, all my resources are going to be available on my blog, or I'm going to be recording this right now and then podcasting it onto my blog. And people saying, oh, laughing to themselves, oh, he's got a blog and all this sort of thing. Well, what's a blog? Well, that's a funny sounding word and this sort of thing. But I think actually, as I've talked about already, these different types of technologies have become completely mainstream. And so when you talk about what a blog is, there's no problem there. Most people, I would say, know what a blog is. So how does that all connect in with professional development? To me, I remember, well, again, on Facebook and on Twitter, you see images all the time of different like quotes or sayings or what have you. And I find lots of those very, very inspiring. And there was one in particular that was talking about Twitter and social media, and was saying that things like Twitter, it's less to do with technology and more to do with psychology and sociology. And I really agree with that. I think Twitter, it's just another technology, but it's to do with human interaction and building a community, and it's about the people. That's what's important. And so to me, instead of, let's say, having a one-day course when you go to a nice hotel or a school or whatever it might be, and you work with, let's say, 10, 15, 20 teachers, and you show them how to use different tools in the classroom, and you say, well, you could use this and use that to do this, that, and the other. That's all very well. But what I love is when people who come to these courses, let's say, say, oh, I follow you on Twitter, Joe, or you can carry on that conversation after that face-to-face meeting. You can carry on that conversation, and you can explore things, and you can learn together. And that's, to me, what it's all about. I think the face-to-face, having said that, is incredibly important. And I still have these evangelical moments when I meet people who I've been following on Twitter, in some cases for years and years and years, but never had the opportunity to meet them face to face. So I think that's very, very important. But at the same time, I think that for me, the way that things like Twitter in particular help professional development is you build up this trust over time. And you love having conversations, and that's what it's all about. I think it's like a cycle, really. You sort of, let's say, I'll introduce someone to a new app, They'll try the app out in the classroom. They'll give me feedback. That will change my thoughts maybe about the app. Maybe I think, yeah, I was right. It is really good. Or they'll say something like, for example, someone might have tried something out with a class of 30 children and found that when they tried to use the app with 30 children because of, let's say, network issues, that somebody didn't work, or you couldn't all sign everyone in at the same time, or those sorts of things, which I can't try out, stuck in my study, as it were, or on the road. Someone has to tell me that through trying that out with, say, a class of 30 children. Now, as you know yourself, when we first tried to have this conversation, we tried to use a tool called Zencastr, and it didn't work. And the only reason that we realized it didn't work was by trying it out. And so I think that whole sort of trial and error idea of this messy learning, if you like, just trying things out and having trust in people is the way to go. I mean, I remember reading about the idea of an iPad coffee club. It doesn't have to be iPad specifically, but it was called an iPad coffee club. And it was this idea of informal learning. So you get, let's say, an expert or someone really interested, enthusiastic about a certain app or what have you, sitting with other people, having coffee and cake involved. In other words, you're having sort of like an informal learning environment. And as a result of that, they're picking things up, they're learning things without the feeling that anything is being imposed upon them. And I think Twitter generates that feeling of community and understanding and trust. I mean, we've met personally, face-to-face, I think twice, or maybe even once. I remember we met at the Bet Show back in whatever that was, 2008. So we've only met face-to-face a couple of times, and yet, you know, we've been connecting with each other for probably 10 years, maybe more. And when you said to me, you know, would you like to come on the show or whatever, or be recorded, I immediately said, love to, no problem at all, because we built up that understanding and that trust, and we're part of this wider EdTech community of people who are like that, really. And so to me, it's all about relationships. It's just a very human, basic idea. It's all about relationships. That's what it's all about to me anyway.
Some very powerful messages there, Joe, and some quite important terms, some of which I'll come back to. Let's follow up where you finished there then, relationships, and come back to something that you mentioned earlier on, which were the MFL Twitterers list and the MFL Twitterati. And you've also used the term, in that context, I think, community. So they all fit together in that way. So how important is that aspect of it? The fact that people have, aggregated around a particular, a hashtag in this case, I guess.
I think it's very, very interesting, this topic, unsurprisingly, because it's, you know, I've put hours and hours and hours and hours, well, years of my time into building this community, and it is about a hashtag, but it's much, much more than that. In fact, again, talk about serendipity on Twitter, a very well-known Spanish teacher from the States called Mora Geisel, or Senor G on Twitter, tweeted this morning, at the end of the year, some people like to sort of give thanks or have their like review of the year, as it were, and thank certain people that have influenced them. And one thing that he tweeted this morning in relation to something that I suppose had inspired him on what I've been doing is talking about the idea that he's going to try and focus on building communities more than just talking around a hashtag. And he was in this case, the hashtag would be LangChat, which is the equivalent, I suppose, of the MFL Twitterati in the States. But having said that, I would say that we're a bigger community. But anyway, that was really inspiring. So I suppose what he's found inspiring about the idea of the community is it is much more than just a hashtag. In fact, in 2014, I had the opportunity to room with Noah. We went to the same conference in the States in San Antonio in Texas, and we were able to room together, and we had loads and loads of amazing chats about Twitter and Lang Chat and the MFL Twitterati and building communities and what have you. That was amazing. So again, that's a way that you can connect with people as well as meeting them face to face and having that connection made even stronger. So I think it makes me laugh as well. I think this relates very much to what you've asked me. It makes me laugh as well when teachers who are not part of the MFL Twitterati will say to me, or will tweet, is there an equivalent of this community on, as part of, say, English teachers or science teachers, whatever it might be? Now, of course, there are lots of teachers who tweet from those subjects. But what I think, what's special, not trying to blow my own trumpet, but what's special about what I've done is I've gone out of my way to, if you like, track down or deliberately try to connect with like-minded teachers who teach languages in this context and pull them together into a list, the MFL Twitterers list. So as I'm sure on Twitter you can create lists very easily. And to me, if let's say you're following 20,000 people, which is what I am, or maybe 21,000, something like that, there's no way, obviously, that you can read everyone's tweets. That's not the point. To me, you're missing a trick if you don't create lists of, if you are a power user, if you don't make lists, you're missing a trick in the sense that you can have different lists for different sort of subjects you're interested in. So I've got lists on, but obviously MFL Twitterers, stuff to do with music. I particularly like folk music, so I've got a list of folk music artists who I like, these sorts of things. And although I would say I read all the tweets from the MFL Twitterers list, which is probably over 1,000 a day, and I find that quite easy because I can just skim and scan, I'll only look at, say, the music one every month or so, just to catch up with things when I'm getting bored or whatever it might be. But to me, what I've tried to do is I've tried to build this community over time. It's not just about what I've been doing. What's also incredibly important is to have regular contributors who were there right at the beginning, I would say, and have stuck there as well. And then also people who maybe have come on board, who got very excited about Twitter, who then carry on tweeting, and other people, you get people who will register and then will tweet once and then never tweet again. So I think that building up, having one person, let's say, particularly leading it, putting in the time to build up the community over time is incredibly important. And I'm sure that there are lots of language teachers who are incredibly grateful to the time that I put in on doing this, because there's nothing like it anywhere else in the world, I would say. I mean, yeah, you've got the wider EdTech community, but it isn't like, let's say, one person curating all those different people into a list. And to do that has meant that now, if you say, tweet a question out there and I retweet it, or someone else retweets it, etc., and it gets seen by lots of people in the community, it means that you might get, let's say, the expert or the experts in the country answering that tweet. So you might, let's say, get an NQT who has said, or maybe like a PGE student saying, right, I've got to write this essay on using phonics in the languages classroom. So that person might tweet that question out there, and you might get the expert in the country or experts in the country saying, oh, well, actually, you should look at this, and this, or have you tried this, etc. So that time that I put in, if you like, to gather together like-minded people and people who are amazing, who go from sort of primary languages teachers to secondary to tertiary, anyone to do with languages in the UK or Ireland, I've added to that list, and that's why it's made it so powerful. But that's not something which we can do overnight. It takes literally years to build that up. But now I would say we're leading the world on the use of social media and languages, and I've spoken about that at conferences in Australia, in North America, in the Middle East, etc., and that's definitely is the case.
Absolutely. I think that the penetration and the reputation that the MFL Twitterati community has is definitely of some significance. And of course, I guess in a sense, well, you tell me, Do you think you would have been able to do that had Twitter not been around? Do you think it was Twitter that helped bring those people together, together with the tools and the connections and relationships that have been established? Or would you have done it anyway using some other social media platform?
Again, great question. And that makes me think as well about that. Just recently, I'm a big fan of Anchor. I'm not sure if you're on the network yet, but it's sort of like an equivalent of Twitter, but using audio. And I was listening to some waves on there, which is the equivalent word for tweets, about the potential demise of Twitter and how people feel if Twitter died. And this sort of thing, because you can never trust, particularly for free technologies, you can never trust they're going to stick around forever. I remember the awful demise of such tools such as Google Reader, that was just suddenly killed by Google, and of course Posterous, that was an amazing platform for creating blogs quickly and easily with email. So you can never, you know, if something's free, you can never really trust that it's going to stick around forever. But in relation to, you know, why Twitter, as it were, Maybe I would have found a different tool, but I think just with Twitter, it just seemed to, I don't know, turn on a switch in my, flick a switch in my head, or turn on a light bulb moment, etc. And I think that, it might sound odd to say, but I think it's true that back in 2007, I think I did have a bit of a plan about trying to build a community of language teachers on Twitter. Even though it was very much early days, I suppose with anything, you want your learning to be relevant. You know, teachers, obviously I was a teacher back then, and teachers are incredibly time poor in general, particularly in the UK. And I think that you can't be involving yourself in something which is not adding, you know, value or giving you something back, because teachers just don't have the time to, you know, to play around with lots of different things. Because they've got so much of their time is taken up by marking and planning and all the rest of it, all the, you know, the bread and butter of what it is to be a teacher. I think that you have to try and, if you like, streamline information into something which is very useful. And so even though I loved talking to people from across the curriculum back in those early days, I always had in the back of my mind the idea that I wanted to nurture the community and build it up. And also, I'd hosted events such as the Isle of Wight Conference back in 2006, which ran for 3 years as part of my Special Schools and Academies Trust work. And that was incredibly important to bring together the face-to-face opportunities for people interested in the use of technology and languages all in the same place. And although we only got, say, between 40 and 70 people or so coming to those different events, they were very much the early adopters and the movers and shakers that wanted to change things. And those are the people who, you know, the regular contributors that I mentioned earlier, who are still on Twitter and are still adding huge value to being part of the community. So, I don't know why. There was just something about Twitter that jumped at me that seemed to fit. And although I'm on Facebook, I don't like Facebook. I don't like Facebook necessarily for professional means. I know lots of people use it for professional means, but I much prefer Twitter, because maybe it is that bite-sized chunk element, or the fact you have to be concise with your language, and more important, I think this is a very important point, that you get to choose who you follow and who you block and who, you know, who you want to connect with. Whereas if people create Facebook groups, then essentially anyone can be part of that, and you can get all this negative commenting and flaming and all the rest of it, which I find infuriating, particularly if, let's say, you've got an NQT that's come up with an idea or says they're struggling with their class or whatever, and then someone is really negative, like a trolling comment, etc. I think that's awful. And one thing, again, I'm very proud of with the NFL Twitter Arty community is it is an incredibly positive community to be part of. And so if there is a lot of doom and gloom, let's face it, in 2016 there's been, you know, one or two things that have happened in the world that have been a little bit irksome, let's say. And I think that being part of a positive community is incredibly important. But again, I think it's important to emphasize that it was, you know, Twitter didn't happen in a vacuum. It was coming from the enthusiasm that was coming through blogging and podcasting, which was, what, a year, 2 years earlier than that. And I can remember talking to David Noble about this and him saying that he found it difficult to sleep at the beginning, because he was so excited about the potential of podcasting from your classroom and all this sort of thing. And I was very similar. I was also incredibly excited about the potential of Web 2.0 tools. And like with lots of things, as I've talked about already, there are lots and lots of different tools that we explored, though, you know, those early adopters back in the day, and shared the ideas through blogging and through commenting on blogs, which has been very much reduced since the birth of Twitter. And likewise, you know, the many years that people have been on Twitter now, the number of people that leave comments on blogs, I would say, has been greatly reduced, apart from maybe national newspapers like The Guardian, etc., although a lot of those comments are very much trolling comments, and I ignore a lot of those. I think that it's a continuum, isn't it? It's a continuum, starting with, and obviously before blogs there were, you know, websites, and, you know, it's not a new thing to say that teachers have connected with each other. But the amazing thing about Twitter and being online in general is the fact that they're, you know, breaking down the walls of the classroom, all those cliches. But it's absolutely true. You know, I think of nothing now, and haven't done for years, of having Twitter conversation with people from all over the world, Skyping with someone that you've never met before, that you want to connect with, for professional reasons or for business reasons or for personal reasons, whatever it might be. We think nothing of that. And I think that people who are not involved in 21st century learning, if you like, or Twitter or such like, I think they're missing out. But at the same time, I don't look down upon them or anything horrible like that. I just think they're missing out, and that's all there is to it. And I think that if they did, you know, dip in from time to time, that, again, that's why I created the M4 Twitter list, they would learn so much from it. You wouldn't expect people to, you know, sit on the sofa and watch the news for 24 hours a day. But if they dip in for, say, 15 minutes a day while having a cup of coffee, they might pick up a real gem that they can use straight away in their classroom. So it's all about balance at the end of the day, I would say.
Absolutely. Balance. That's an important thing that we don't perhaps always get right. You've talked about a number of people specifically, and people in general, and communities as a group. Do you think that the people about whom you've been talking are in any way different? Do you need a particular set of dispositions or a particular attitude, set of beliefs, in order to get the most from whatever activity you're involved in using Twitter or social media more generally?
I would say definitely when you're talking about early adopters, you would be talking about personalities that maybe like taking risks, that are not afraid to try things out. The popular phrase that's been banging around for a few years now is growth mindset. So I think that teachers that have a growth mindset are the sorts of teachers who are likely to want to try out new technologies, try out things in the classroom. But I think it's much more than that. Having said that, I think that, as I talked about already, there's 4,600 members of the MFL Twitterati, and thank goodness they're all not really, really active, otherwise I'd have more than 1,000 tweets to read a day, to say the least. But I think that I've always said to people, it's okay if you want to lurk and learn. You don't have to be someone who wants to just, you know, go for it all the time and let's say have a high profile or what have you. I think one thing I love about things like Twitter in particular is it is a great leveler. It's very democratic. So if you're tweeting about good stuff, then you're going to get heard, I would say. Or it might take time to build up an audience, but you'll get heard. And I've talked already about the idea of trying to give people a helping hand on creating like a ready-made community for them to, you know, just hop into and then benefit immediately. And that's why people, I think, get it more easily if they are a language teacher as part of that community, or they can just search the hashtag and pick up fantastic gems and not actually be, you know, as such, you know, joining the conversation. But I think those people that do that, they get so much out of it. And like with teaching, you know, you get out of the activity as much as you put in. If you're a teacher that spends a lot of time planning lessons and making resources and finding out about the children's personalities and incorporating content that you know that the kids like into your lessons, then the kids, unless they're horrible, the kids will almost certainly really, really appreciate that and will raise their standards as a result. And as I said already about Twitter and relationships, teaching is all about relationships as well, and you know, having if you like, love for the children, love for what you do, and you can't hide that. People appreciate that, I think. So the sorts of personality traits that you need to have, I think, in general, yeah, growth mindset is very important, but also I think it's absolutely fine to be, if you like, a bit introvert, and not necessarily be as visible as maybe other people may be on Twitter. Certainly there are some people who are very, very visible all the time, and that's fine, I suppose, if that's what they want to do, that's not a problem. But other people like to lurk and learn, and I think that's okay as well. I think it's everything, isn't it? It's all about talking about, you know, British values, which again is something which has been talked about a lot recently. I think it is about being understanding and helping each other and not trolling and not being nasty. And because we're all in it together, you know, even though I'm not in the classroom now, I'm married to a language teacher. I very much care about language teachers. I communicate with language teachers on a daily basis. And if I can help teachers from the UK, from Ireland, from all over the world, and I'm sure other people feel exactly the same, then I'm absolutely delighted to do that. And that might be from the point of view of giving someone, you know, a bit of encouragement, saying good luck, they're going for an interview, or tweeting a link to someone who you know will appreciate it, or seeing someone tweeting about some subject and you think, well, you need to speak to this person. Those sorts of connections, I think, are incredibly important. And that's not really to do with the technology. That's just about being a nice person. And I think those are aspects which I care about, which I think is really good. And I suppose I try to encourage people to be like that and not to swear, let's say, you're part of the community and what have you. And I have received quite a lot of flack about that, and I've actually fallen out, maybe I shouldn't be saying this, but I've fallen out with people via DMs because I sort of said, well, actually, you know, there are some people who are offended, I know, by bad language. And I think it did calm down for a certain period of time, but now I tend to just take people off the list if they're going to swear, because I think you know, we're all professionals, and we're just there to learn from each other. And my word, can we do that? And we don't need any distraction about, you know, inappropriate or swearing or what have you. Having said that, I think on a Saturday night, if people are watching Strictly Come Dancing, and I watch that personally, and they want to tweet about, you know, their TV shows or football, obviously much more important, watching football and tweeting about, you know, a game or having a bit of banter, as one says, I think that's incredibly important as well, to lighten the atmosphere from time to time. I think that's also very important about being human again. It's all about being human, I think. That's the power of it. And it's connecting humans with each other. It's not really about the technology. That's just the medium, really. It's about human interaction and people supporting each other, which I love. It's fantastic.
Super. Well, I realise we're on 45 minutes. Are you okay for another, just two more questions, Joe?
I'm absolutely fine. If you want to talk for a lot longer, I'm more than happy to do that, and then we can just edit down the stuff that you don't want or whatever. But I'm more than happy, if it's going to be helpful for your research, I'm more than happy to bang on for as long as you want.
Absolutely, that's fantastic. I've noted a number of words that you've used during the course of this, and we'll just go backwards in all. You talked about being human, about banter, about connections, encouragement and encouraging people, excitement, trust, lurking, and relationships. Coffee and cake. These are all words which you wouldn't traditionally associate with professional development. Do you think that social media, Twitter specifically, are bringing opportunities for these things to emerge, which are satisfying a need that people are finding isn't being satisfied through traditional forms of professional development?
Yeah, great question. I would disagree with that. I think those things have always been happening, but maybe during the lunch times and the break times, when people get to connect with each other face to face, let's say at conferences or training that's been happening over the years. But what's happened with Twitter is it's amplified those sorts of water cooler moments, if you like, conversations that have been a bit more informal, but have nonetheless been, you know, have been professional and interesting. And now for some people, I certainly feel like this myself sometimes, but some people, when they go to conferences, yes, obviously they're interested in going to different sessions, etc., but what they're more interested in is having the opportunity to speak to like-minded colleagues during the break time, during lunchtime. So I think food and banter and those connections that people have built up over time, forgetting about Twitter as in the past or still now, obviously, those are all really, really important. So I think that what Twitter has done is it's just made that possible now on a global scale. So when you do get to meet people, and I would say I've met most language teachers who I connect with in the UK, most people I've been connecting with for many, many years, I've met them now face-to-face, but I still have these, tingling moments when I get to meet people who I maybe haven't met before, and I absolutely love that. So I think that, I think that's what it's all about. I think those things have always been there. I mean, when you do, a training course, there'll always be some comment about the food. Now, even if you give people caviar and smoked salmon, you'd always get someone who would say, oh, there was no hot food. Or, do you know what I mean? You'll always get someone complaining about the food. So the food is incredibly important to people, and the opportunity to network is very important to people. And because I've been involved in organising training events as well, it's incredibly important to plan all these things in to keep everyone happy. So to give people enough networking time, obviously to have interesting sessions that people can go to, but also more and more you're seeing teachers on, say, presentation slides, they'll put their email address and they'll put their Twitter handle and they'll put the hashtag for the conference. And those sorts of things you wouldn't have seen as much of in past years. I remember always being very impressed by the way that the Scottish Learning Festival were using hashtags, etc., back in, would have been probably 2006, I think, and the fact they used to record lots of the sessions as audio podcasts, so I could then listen back to those, not having to go up to Glasgow. I could listen from the comfort of my own study to these audio recordings, and again that would blow my mind. Or if there would be like a conference in the States, like the Building Learning Communities conference that happens in Boston every year, being able to listen to people like Ewan McIntosh giving a talk thousands of miles away via an audio podcast. So I think all these things have been there for a long time. It's just that the technology, Twitter, audio recording, something publishing on the net so anyone can access it, has just created so many more opportunities and has amplified what people have been doing for years and years and years and years and years.
I think that's a very valid point and definitely significant. You mentioned there that you have been, and earlier too, that you have been around the world and you've seen a lot of these. You've also discussed how social media are actually part of all of the offering and the opportunities that we have to learn as teachers, some of which are face-to-face, like the Isle of Wight sessions that you put on and various other opportunities. So taking the whole thing in context, what... you may not have an opportunity to offer an opinion on this, but what outcomes have resulted as a result of all of this cornucopia of different opportunities, particularly obviously social media and so forth? Are you aware of things that have happened, impacts that have taken place?
Yeah, well, as you know, I wrote an article for The Guardian a couple of years ago, 2013, I think it was. And just before that, I was nominated for one of the awards for NACE, for the professional development or teacher support category. And I had to do exactly that. I had to show what was the impact of, because it was to do with my working with the MFL Twitterati and building the community. I had to give evidence for, NACE asked me to give them evidence on what was the impact on the classroom of the sorts of things that I've been involved in, the things that you've referred to. And so what I did, I felt a little bit guilty about it, to be honest, but I crowdsourced the people on Twitter, their opinion about what was the impact on the classroom, not admitting to why I was doing it, because I felt that if I said, well, this is actually evidence for an award. I didn't win it, by the way. No, it's all about winning. But anyway, it would skew the results. And so I didn't tell them that. And they told me lots of information. And then I put that, I sort of made like a summary bullet points, including all those ideas in the Guardian article. So the sorts of impact that being part of the Amazon Twitter RT has had in recent years are things that I've sort of referred to a little bit of this already, but keeping up to date with relevant and interesting bits of information from, let's say, the government or Ofsted or some report that's just come out. So, for example, I think a couple of weeks ago now, there was a big review that had come out about modern languages that had been put together by a small committee of teachers. And obviously, the MFL Twitter article would be very interested in that. And within a few within a few hours, I believe, that it was published. I tweeted about it. Other people have been tweeting about it. Steve Smith, or SP Smith 45, had written a quick review on the findings, those sorts of things. It's just incredible. So that's one aspect, keeping up to date with things. I think another very important aspect is for those teachers who maybe feel a bit isolated in their classroom or within their school, or maybe they're the only person teaching languages. That's particularly true of the primary languages community, although there is a fantastic Facebook community called LIPS, or Languages in Primary Schools, which anyone listening to this who's interested in languages, even if you're secondary, doesn't matter, I really encourage you to join that community, because it's incredibly positive and enthusiastic community, similar to, you have a lot of the same people in the MFL Twitter RT. So that's another thing. I think also in the same example, when you've got maybe teachers who are very enthusiastic about their subjects, and maybe don't share that enthusiasm with like-minded colleagues within their department, they can get that virtual enthusiastic fix, if you like, by being on Twitter. So I can remember back in the day when I'd had, let's say, a bad lesson or what have you, and I'd pop onto let's say Ian McIntosh's blog, and I'd be really inspired by something that he'd written, and I was saying, yeah, that is the right way to go. You know, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep going. Okay, I've had a bad lesson, but it's not the end of the day. You know, that's a really interesting idea he's just tweeted about or written about or whatever. I'll try that out and I'll pick myself up. And so I think that's also, you can't emphasize enough the amount of support that people get from the MFL Twitter RT. In fact, on that point, a couple of years before that, at the first ILILC conference, or ILICH, that we did at Southampton University, which is based on the Isle of Wight conference. We had a bit of a hiatus of a couple of years, and then Southampton University got in contact with me and suggested that we sort of, if you like, recreate the Isle of Wight conference back in Southampton. I crowdsourced the MFL Twitter RT, asking them, what does the MFL Twitter RT mean to you? And then I had about 30 responses or so, and then all those responses I put into Wordle. And what do you think was the biggest word that came up? In other words, the word that they most used within those tweets?
Oh, wow. It could be community, it could be companionship, connection.
Sort of. It was actually the word support, which I thought was incredibly important. Again, going back to what I talked about earlier, a very human, you know, characteristic. So support. So I just, again, that was just lovely, and I thought that was fantastic. So again, that's an impact on the, and another impact on the classroom, which is, I'm sure, particularly what lots of people want to know about. You know, what's the impact on the children? Well, the feedback that I'd had from the MFL Twitter RT for the Guardian article was to say that the feedback the children had given to the teachers was that they were finding lessons more engaging because the teacher was trying out a wider variety of ideas which they'd learned from Twitter, and as a result of that, it was like a win-win situation. The teacher was happier because they were trying out lots of new ideas that maybe they weren't aware of, and they, you know, because if you don't know what you don't know, as it were, then how can you put into something into practice if you've never heard of it? But also, if you can, you know, find out about an idea, maybe share an idea, make a good idea, a great idea through Twitter, then that can have a huge impact on the classroom. So I thought that was very, very interesting as well. The kids thought that the teachers were coming up with more creative ideas. Maybe that had more global impact, or the whole idea of trying to promote intercultural understanding again through Twitter. You can get lots of global ideas by maybe connecting with language teachers from around the world. I talked about Noah Geisel earlier from the States. Lots of language teachers now have made connections with language teachers, their equivalents in Australia, in the States, and what have you. And so if they can then make little connections with each other, maybe doing little activities which could involve maybe a mystery Skype, or I know a friend of mine, Amanda Salt, came up with the idea of asking Spanish teachers from around the world to maybe send her tweets talking about the sorts of sports and pastimes they'd like to do at the weekend, but in Spanish. And she then used that as a way of creating, I think it was a worksheet, but with authentic language. And that was incredible. And that's something which I'm sure that young people find very inspiring, even though they're doing that themselves. But if the teacher's doing that, that, in my opinion, that makes it really, really cool and exciting. So I think those are some of the that refers to some of the impact that that the Informal Twitter RT has had in the classroom. But in lots of ways, who knows, really? I mean, there's a lady called Kathy Elliott on Twitter, is part of the Informal Twitter RT community, and she's tweeted a few times about the fact that nobody really knows what impact a piece of support or a tweet might have on someone. And I think that's very true. And again, one reason I love meeting people face to face is because they might have a conversation with you about such and such a tweet that maybe you've forgotten about that you sent out 6 months ago, let's say, that had a massive impact on their way of thinking, the methodology that they use in the classroom. You have no idea. That's why I think it's important, going back to what I've said earlier, to keep feeding the community with stuff that you think they'll be interested in, and then hoping that will help support the profession as a whole, and that's what it's all about. But you never really know what the impact's going to be. But it's lovely to hear about lovely examples when something that you've tweeted has been particularly useful and beneficial for the teacher and obviously for the children, which is the most important thing at the end of the day.
Couldn't agree more. And I think you have an incredibly important point there, which also refers to those people who lurk, who, again, we don't know what the impact is on them, but nevertheless, there is undoubtedly one. And it's just occasionally that you get those short snippets of feedback which indicate that you are making a difference. Yeah. Joe, we're virtually on an hour, and I certainly don't want to take up any more of your time, let alone your families. If I can just close by saying, is there anything that you've not had the chance to talk about that you're aware is an important or significant or just a plain interesting aspect to using Twitter for professional learning?
Well, something as I've sort of implied already, I do like trying out things which are new all the time. That's just one of my characteristics, I think, in my personality. And something which I'd like to plug, if you like, or something I'd like to mention is Anchor, which I've talked about already. And I've been on Anchor, well, it first started, I think, in February 2016. And it's probably about one of the only good news stories from 2016, I think. But anyway, but it was, yeah, it started about 2016 in February, and it's essentially like an equivalent of an audio Twitter, if you like. So similar to Twitter back in 2007, there aren't that many people on the platform. I've connected with a few people, but I think it's very interesting in the sense that it's different from Twitter in the way that I was talking earlier about being able to read 1,000 tweets in a day, maybe more, I don't know, because it's very easy to skim and scan with written text, but with audio you can't do that because you have to give a certain amount of time commitment to listen to stuff, and it might very easily be something which you're not interested in. And maybe, again, talking about the fact that teachers are very time poor, what I'm doing now, I'm also time poor as well in lots of ways. And so you have to really commit to something which you know is going to have value. And so even though I love audio, and I think audio has an aspect which is better than text in lots of ways, in the sense that you get to hear someone's voice, it's more personal. Again, it reflects the human aspect of the other person. I think that's very important. And so anyway, for a while, I've been thinking about the idea of creating an MFL Twitter RT podcast. And I've mentioned this to different teachers. And there's been an interesting response. Lots of people said, great idea. This has all been through Twitter. Great idea, but maybe, you know, teachers are busy. Maybe go for like a 10-minute, 15-minute tips and tricks type of podcast. And then other people have been saying, no, either, you know, go big or go home, as it were. Go for like more in-depth interviews, something like this, maybe half an hour, that sort of thing. Or maybe a show which includes different sections, some, you know, to try and keep everybody happy. And so through Anchor, as soon as I started, you know, playing around with Anchor, I thought, ooh, this could be really good for the MFL Twitterati. Like with lots of tools I've talked about already, I always have this sort of like language teacher head on, or thinking through ideas with a language teacher lens, if you like, and trying to work out how things could be useful for the language teaching community. And I thought, well, we know that we have slow chats on Twitter, don't we? Mm-hmm. Because some people, you know, they feel that, let's say, the UK Ed Chat hashtag is wonderful, but you can easily get lost if there's so many tweets that it's difficult to follow a stream. Whereas if you have a slow chat, in other words, you have, let's say, a chat going on during the whole week, and every day you have a new question, then people have the opportunity to reflect on their answers, and it's less frenetic, which has its advantages and disadvantages, one could argue. So I thought, wouldn't it be cool to use Anchor as an opportunity of having an audio slow chat? So again, I mentioned this on Twitter, and Rachel Smith, or Lank/Rach, got in contact with me and made it very clear that she loved listening to podcasts and sort of, you know, those sorts of talking head recordings and talk radio type of context. And I'm very similar to that. That's why I love podcasts and listen to podcasts and the rest of it from interesting educators. And so what we've done this week is we've had a trial run, and if you want to follow it, it's the hashtag MFLSlowChat. No, sorry, that's wrong. Forget that. The hashtag is MFL Anchor Chat. I was thinking, do I go for MFL Audio Slow Chat? That's a bit too long for a hashtag, isn't it? So anyway, I've gone for MFL Anchor Chat, but essentially it is an audio slow chat. And so what we've done, off the back of, again, a Twitter conversation, again, a serendipity idea, off the back of a Twitter conversation, Steve Smith, SB Smith 45, was asking for ideas on how you could use Explain Everything, a very popular app, in the classroom, the languages classroom. And so instead of just, you know, tweeting out a load of suggestions, I suggested to Rachel that we talked about the whole thing as an audio recording. And so what we've done exactly that. I started off with a question talking about what I've just said, you know, heard from Steve Smith this morning on Twitter that he wanted to get some crowdsourcing ideas about Explain Everything. So I got in contact with Rachel about the idea of having an audio slow chat. It's just an experiment. Let's see what happens. And so Rachel, bless her, because Rachel also is an Apple Distinguished Educator as of last year. And so she has a huge wealth of information and ideas on how to use different apps, obviously, but in the classroom, because she's a practicing teacher, which is incredible. So I think that sort of relationship that we had, that we built up over time on Twitter and we met face to face, has meant that we've been able to have a really fantastic discussion in the last few days or so. And it's now up to 22 waves, and each wave, as part of one conversation, each wave is 1 minute long. So it means it's only 22 minutes, but within those 22 minutes, we've got a fantastic amount of information. Now, something else which I've been reflecting on, which I've been DMing Rachel about as well, is one, I've really enjoyed the experience, and we haven't finished yet. We've still got a few more comments to go. And I'm also going to open up to the wider community and encourage people, like with Twitter, I suppose, encourage people to sign up to Anchor and to tweet waves as well as replies within the conversation. So we can then export the whole thing as one audio file. And as a result of that, put that onto Rachel's blog as a podcast, and then everyone can then benefit from it as a result. So that's been really, really good fun. And ultimately, my thoughts are to make a podcast, including, let's say, Anchor Chats with longer form interviews, and to go from there, and being able to, say, connect with teachers from around the world, maybe contact them, this is my thought, contact them and asked them to send me some audio saying things like, you're listening to the MFL Twitter RT podcast, you know, and or I'm from Australia, I'm from the States, I'm, you know, my name is Noah Geisel and I teach in such and such a school, you're listening, you know, do you know what I mean? And have those, like, so make like this personal podcast, but including people from all over the world. And I think that through my connections, because I know a lot of people, one or two people, I think that would be worthwhile doing. Okay, it would be a lot of time I could have to put on to create that, but I think it's the sort of thing I feel excited about doing. And when I get excited about something, I tend to try and go for it and see what happens. So I'm very grateful to Rachel for kickstarting this, because you can't really do a conversation show with one person, as it were. And then encourage other people to follow suit and to maybe join Anchor and to chip in, or maybe have regular Anchor chats as part of the podcast with a variety of people. Because I think people are less worried about maybe recording a few waves that are a minute each, but maybe they're a bit worried or scared about the idea of having a half an hour or an hour chat with someone on Skype, let's say. They'd much rather think about their responses. And again, I've been thinking about the difference between synchronous and asynchronous communications. And this is obviously synchronous. We're both talking, you know, one after the other in real time, etc. But with Anchor, you do get the opportunity, as with a slow chat, you do get the opportunity of reflecting on your answer and maybe, as I've been doing, making notes, bullet points on the things I want to cover to make sure that I'm not wasting people's time and I'm as concise as possible. And I know Rachel's been doing the same thing. And that's been, from the point of view of accessing higher order thinking skills, I think that's definitely been the case. And that's why maybe I've enjoyed it so much, because I felt that I've really tried to deliver the best answers possible. And I think likewise, to the best questions, as it were. I've been bombarding Rachel with questions, but she's done a wonderful job on answering those brilliantly. And I think we've both learned new things from the experience as well, which has been amazing, which is what it's all about.
What a perfect place to end. It certainly is. And in fact, the last question is often one that's dismissed and people struggle to answer because they've not really thought about it and it doesn't have a specific focus. Joe, that was exactly the opposite. That had a really, really clear focus. And you're the second person now who I trust who's mentioned Anchor, and I think I'm going to have to take a closer look at it. Your excitement and enthusiasm has generated in me excitement and enthusiasm for giving it a try, particularly in the research context. I can't think of anyone who's ever used a tool like that for collecting research. So thank you so much for that. And thank you so much for the amount of time you've given today. And the intensity, the answers, or density as a physicist. You've squeezed so much into so little time. And I'm so grateful.
You're very welcome. I'm really flattered, as I said right at the beginning of the interview, to take part in this. I love, as probably comes across, I love talking about this sort of thing, showing my enthusiasm, which is very natural. It's not put on at all. I'm just, as I've always been, very enthusiastic about when I was in the classroom and also out of the classroom and sharing ideas and connecting with teachers. I would really encourage you to have a go with Anchor, if it you know, jumps at you, if you like it. There's hardly any educators that I'm aware of who are on Anchor. There are people like Teacher Toolkit, but even Teacher Toolkit, you see, he's been recording quite a few waves, but he's had hardly any replies. Although he's got whatever it is, 120,000 people following him, whatever it is on Twitter. And so isn't that interesting that he's got that huge reach? So he's, you know, quite a few people listening to his recordings, maybe say, I'm not checked exactly, but let's say 50 or 60 or 70 or whatever people are listening to each wave, let's say in some cases, but he hasn't got loads and loads of replies. And that's why it's so early days. But hand on heart, I think it has a huge potential. And the idea maybe of having people from anywhere in the world recording a wave on their iOS device, or now it's available on Android as well. It's not available on the web yet, but I'm sure that will come out in 2017. The fact that they can record a message, send it and have it all as part of a threaded conversation that can be exported as one audio file, which means for podcasters that's a breakthrough moment, I think, is incredibly powerful. And the human voice is fantastic, I think, for making connections and for giving this idea of trust, because you know I will follow people who maybe aren't teachers, but just because I like the sound of their voice and I like what they're saying. Whereas anyone to do with, say, marketing, as soon as I know they're a marketing person, I won't follow them because I'm not interested in that. I'm just interested in talking to real teachers about real things. I'm not wasting people's time or having any ulterior motive, etc. I just want to connect with like-minded people, and I've been doing that for 12 years, whatever it is now, through first of all blogging and then Twitter and all these other tools we've been talking about. Maybe now Anchor, it's time to connect via Anchor. So if you do sign up, please follow me, I'll follow you back, and we can have lots of Anchor wave chats. That'd be great.
Sounds fantastic. Yeah, I'll certainly do that, Joe. I'm going to say thanks once more, and I really do appreciate the time you've given up today, and I'm going to press stop on the record now. I'd like to close by repeating my thanks to Joe for being so generous with his time, to thank him for his observations, and to repeat my invitation to any listeners who might like to be involved in the project. Just catch me on Twitter or the CPD in 140 blog.